Hello and welcome to Working Out God. Super excited to have you join us today. We have a really special guest, someone that I call a very, very dear friend. So today we have Nana with us. Nana is a British actress, originally from Ghana, so her family are Ghanaian descent. She was born in Accra herself and she moved to the UK as a child. As we delve into her story, you'll learn that she studied law at the University of Sussex before she embarked a career in acting, and she has since then graduated from the Central School of Speech and Drama. Her stage credits and her CV go as long as my arm, and they include Caroline or Change, Avenue Q, Made in Dagenham, and she's been at the Shakespeare Globe, worked at the Young Vic, and was nominated for an Evening Standard Award for her performance in Been So Long. She's also been involved, and you've probably seen her in Death in Paradise and A Wheel of Time, as well as appearing in Industry and Mrs. Siddhu Investigates. She's currently on stage with Harry Potter and The Cursed Child. She's a singer and a mother, and we are so excited to be speaking to her today. So welcome, Nana.
Hello.
Hello, so excited to have this conversation with you. As you know, we're in the season of exploring the will of God, or God's will, purpose, calling. And I couldn't think of someone greater to kick this off with us. Purely on the basis of, for our audience, they probably don't realise that you started off doing a law degree. And I'm going to stop there. Yes. And then hand this over to you so that you can get our audience up to speed as to how your journey from university to now, how that's evolved.
Right. Thank you so much for having me. I did a law degree. My parents and myself are from Ghana. For anybody who understands a source of African culture, there are certain jobs that you do, law, medical, engineering, accountancy.
Yeah.
They're sort of like a stringent plan of the things that they believe are solid foundations for a good future. So I did a law degree, but my passion, the thing I did as a hobby, was always drama. So whilst I was at university studying, I was part of the drama club. I'd always sang praise and worship in church. So I love singing. Mm. And I think I have quite a gregarious nature in general anyway. So I did my law degree and I was meant to be going on to do my solicitor training. And I had a year out where I worked within the legal field to pay for my solicitor's training, because I thought, I don't want to take out a loan. Whilst I was working, I had this sort of, I don't know if you call it a road to Damascus moment, where there was a day I was going into work and I'd gone for my induction for solicitor training school, my LPC. Mm-hmm. And I remember the words of the lecturer saying, law is not a job, it's a vocation. When you start this, you have to be so passionate about it. You have to want to help people. You have to want to make the law work and do all the things that is necessary, because, you know, in some cases it's people's lives on the line. Mm. And their livelihoods and things that have occurred to them. And in that session of that lecture, I felt hot, because I felt physically hot, because something in me just went, this isn't where you're supposed to be. You're not supposed to be doing this.
So up until that point, you hadn't thought, even though you were involved in drama and singing and all of those creative aspects, up until this point you hadn't thought, actually maybe I shouldn't be doing law?
Never.
Okay.
It had always been a very clear line of what I was going to do. I'd kind of gone, yep, this is me, law, because everyone had, and I tell you as well, family, friends, everyone gone, you're really outgoing, you speak very well, you know, you should do law. Mm-hmm. I did well in history. They're like, you're really good at history, you should do law. Mm-hmm. I also did well in English, you're really good at English, you should do law. So it was always this sort of thing. And I felt very much like this was also my calling. But if so many people are saying your personality lends itself to law, everything about lends itself to law. And I've got like my uncle's best friend, my uncle Hammond, is a barrister. So I also did work with him.
Right.
So everyone was like, oh, you're just like Uncle Hammond. And me and my Uncle Hammond get on like a house on fire. And he was always like, yeah, you'd be very good at advocacy, just because of how you are able to analyze certain things and your grasp of, you know, the English language and all the subtleties. So for me, my skill set placed me within the legal world. So okay. That was where I was always going. It was only when the lecturer was talking about how you have to have a passion for this yourself. It's got to be something that you almost gets you up in the morning, that the search for justice. And I'm sure it's something that the lecturer has said to multiple different students as, you know, like a rousing battle cry of this is what you need to do.
But it really struck a chord with you.
It struck a chord with me because I thought, I don't know if I'm actually passionate about this or if this is what other people have told me I should be doing.
Mm.
And so it just, I remember walking to work and was going back to work after the lecture and I just kind of went, what can I do to avoid going back into the office? Maybe if I just go here, and I just was thinking, I don't want to go back in. Something had just shifted in me. So I took, you know, I went in and when I got home, I had a conversation with my partner who then became my husband, boyfriend at the time. And I said, something doesn't feel right. And he just said to me, why? He said, what is it? And I said, after going to that meeting, I don't know if law is what my passion is. And he just said to me outright, he said, what is it that makes you happy? What is it that when you do, you feel a sense of absolute joy? And I said, the only thing that I've ever felt that euphoric sort of joy in is whenever I'm performing. I said, when I'm singing praise and worship or when I'm doing some sort of amdram thing, the stuff I do for fun, there's just this sort of, I feel so happy.
Mm-hmm.
I never feel like, oh, this is a chore. It feels like, I don't know, like just what I would consider to be pure unadulterated joy.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, would you consider doing that? And I said, that's insane. Because hilariously, beforehand, when I was picking my options, whether to become a barrister or to become a solicitor, I'd looked and seen that barristers are self-employed. And their jobs aren't technically secure. You have to get into a chambers. All barristers are self-employed. So all the jobs that you get, you bill the chambers, the offices that you work for as, and they have to give you jobs. So I was like, no, I'm going to be a solicitor because it gives me more job certainty because it's a, you know, a full-time paid job and I don't have to feel scared about it. And I wanted to have a family, security. I want to have a family. I want to have children. I thought, and it will give me maternity leave and stuff. And I'm a very sensible person. Even with all of my gregarious nature, I'm constantly thinking about, okay, how am I going to survive in this, you know? And this job, and then I realized that being an actor was also self-employed. And it was almost like an act of faith. Because as an actor, there are many, many wonderful actors. I know incredible actors who don't work. You can go for multiple auditions and never get a role. So it was a thing of going, do I trust that I could do this thing that fills me so much joy and survive and be able to pay my way through life doing it?
Just to step in here. So you've had this conversation with your husband or partner at the time and realised that actually what brings you joy is something completely different. Although it's been a part of your life, it is very, very different to the vocation that you'd started off academically. Now, you've mentioned that there's this act of faith of, you know, going into an industry that there is no job security and it's, you know, make hay while the sun shine type of industry, right? So, but going back to the very first point that you made about your cultural background and all your family, you know, very much riling you and gearing you up, saying, Anna, you know, you're a lawyer, this is what you're called for, this is what you're made for, this is where your skill sets are. How did that conversation
pan out with your family, saying to them, I'm not going to do law anymore?
To be fair, I did what we call the sneaky halfway house, which I think a lot of young people from, backgrounds where parents are very, the adult to revere the parents, where it's like, I want to go out to a party and I know it's going to finish at midnight, but what I'm going to say to my parents is I'll be home by 10 and then gradually push it to try and get it to midnight.
Yeah.
And so it was more of a, I said, look, I want to do a qualification in performance because it's something that I love. Then I'll go back to law, because I'd never taken a gap year. I'd never done anything quote unquote fun or traveled at all. So I said, look, let me do a halfway house. So my parents were like, okay, what do you want to do? I said, well, maybe I'll do a master's. I'll do a master's in maybe performing. It will help me with law.
And parents love that, performance
aspect, and they love that.
Parents love it. Masters, yes.
Oh, a master's. So you'll have a master's, and then you'll have your, you know, your solicitor training or your barrister training. Yes. Yeah. Oh, lovely, lovely. So I found a MA program in performing arts, and in their minds, I was going to go and do it for a year, get my master's, and then come back and train as a lawyer. Mm. So that's how it first started. So I found a, I Googled, and this is how God works. I Googled MA in acting, and I had in my bank account, and this is how, I had £10,000 in my bank account from saving for my LPC to become a solicitor, because that's how much it was. I'd saved when I was working, and I Googled Masters in Performing Arts. Three schools turned up. One of them was 14,000. One of them was 10,000. And the other one was 6,000 with like a bursary.
Okay.
They had just joined with like UCL or something. And so it was a combined master's. And I went, okay, well, I've got 10,000. I need 4,000 I can live on for a year. So I'm going to pick that school. Now, unbeknownst to me, it's one of the best drama schools in the whole of the UK. Wow. If not one that is one of the best drama schools internationally. It's called the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama.
Hmm.
And it was, I didn't know anything about drama schools. I just knew that this is how much money I had. And so this was the school that I could afford to go to. It was only when I spoke to my, a very good friend of mine, who I'm still friends with today, Rob, who's a composer. And I said, Rob, so I'm going in for this school and I need some help with music because you had to sing. And he kind of went, do you know what this school is, Nana? I said, no, what is it? He said, for every one person who gets in, there's 400 applicants. And I went, what? Okay. He said, this is what, he said, it's so hard to get into these drama schools that you're looking at. And I went, okay, well, if I'm, and I've always lived by the thing, if I'm meant to do it, then I will do it.
Sure.
So I, everybody just sort of stepped in and helped me when I applied for drama school. My pastor, my praise and worship leader, my friend who, you know, my friend Rob, who plays music, was able to annotate some of the music for me. I got advice from loads of people. I just was talking to everybody. My old law professor wrote me a really beautiful, like, reference, because I didn't know what I was doing. And when I went to this audition to get into the drama school program, I was just, I felt very like out of place. There were all these people doing stretches and like warming up and la, 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 la. And I was like, what is happening here? But I just had to pray and say, okay, well, Lord, this is, and I only applied for one.
Whereas other people, put all your eggs in one basket.
I put all my eggs in the one basket, because that's the only place I could afford. Yeah. Because I couldn't afford to do the others, because I just went, then I'd have to start taking out loans and then it would just be a whole problem for me. So I just said, okay, Lord, if this is where you want me to be, I've got one shot. I either get in or I don't get in. If I don't get in, I go to law school, because I still had my place for law school. So it was this massive thing of, if I got into drama school, I'd go and do drama. If I didn't, I'd be going to do law. And okay. I came to a crossroads of my life and I had to just relinquish everything. And lo and behold, by the grace of God, I got into drama school.
Wow.
And even when I remember the first day of going, my drama school teacher just kind of said to me, we loved your audition and we loved the fact that you'd never done anything like this before. And when I got it, even I was like, if this is not God, then I don't know who it is, because there is no way or reason I should have ended up in that school, especially when you read about who the people are who've gone to that school.
But it had to, only God, it had to be only God. Yeah.
And it was a choice, one way or the other. It was a literal toss of a dice. And then with the, you know, to get to your aunt's, your question, my parents then came to see a show I did at drama school. And it was afterwards when people were coming up to me and going, oh my goodness, that was amazing. And they were like, oh, who are you? So those my parents. And they were saying, your daughter is extraordinary. Then my mum and dad just sort of looked at me and went, you're really good at this. Like, I think it hadn't really, because they didn't know. Because when I was doing stuff at school, it's not that they were coming to watch my, you know, drama club things at university. It was just the things I was doing on my own back. And yeah. I think it was at that point where my mum just went, you have a gift for this, like an actual gift. You are really, really good. And I think it's when you have a talent or a gift or something that God has placed in you, sometimes it takes for other people just to see you in action, for them to sort of, the penny to drop to them to go, wow, there is something here that we maybe never even recognized.
So true.
After 6 months of doing the course, I was given an agent. Now, how it works in acting world is you have an agent, and normally an agent will sign you when they've seen you do something, or you've written to them and they call you in and you have a meeting and you do maybe like an audition piece to them, and they think actually this person has got something and we can represent them. And they then start putting you up for different jobs.
Okay.
Well, my first agent had come in sneakily to one of our school shows. And at that point, we weren't supposed to sign with agents because they say you're supposed to wait until you finish the course. My agent then messaged me and two other people privately, and basically got our contact details and said, look, we came in and we saw your school, one of the shows that you'd done, and we'd really love for you to come in for a meeting. So I went in with two other classmates, and he asked to sign myself and another classmate.
Even before I'd finished
my master's, I had already got an agent. Offered representation with an agent. And then, you know, my school were like, okay, well, this is why you're here for, is to, you know, get work. So we're not going to stop it, but we want you to complete the course. And as I'm going, the agent was putting me up for jobs. And before I'd finished, I'd already booked my first role at the National Theatre. So from coming from a place of having no experience whatsoever to entering a drama school to then being cast in a show at one of the biggest theatres in the whole of the UK this is what miracles are made of. And so at that time, again, I'd still deferred my place to law school, so there was still a possibility that I was going to go back there. And it was, again, like I said, the ethnic parent going out slide. Well, I've got this job, so what I'm going to do is when I finish, I'm going to go and do the job and just taste what it's like. Then I can go back to law because I can go back the next year anyway. And it was like, oh, okay. So at this point, I think my parents were still like, she could still be going back to do law. Let's not panic.
Little did they know.
Little did they know. And then they came to watch me on the stage at the Littleton at the National Theatre. And again, it was that moment of seeing all these people clapping for a performance that their child had done. And again, coming up to them and going, oh my goodness, she was amazing. That my family started to go again, okay, so wait, people are willing to pay you to do this thing. This is actually crazy. And it's also when I realized that a lot of like the fear, I put in inverted commas, or the things that we have within our family line isn't because they don't want to support us, it's because it's an area they know nothing about. When it comes to law, accountancy, engineering, there's so many friends and family who do that job that our parents and family know how to navigate you in that world. But acting, they were like, we don't know anyone who's an actor. Does it pay? Does it, can they survive? Can she look after her children? Can she eat? What happens in this realm? And so when the door started to open, it was like God wasn't just revealing things to me, he was revealing things to my family as well.
So good. But Nana, can I ask, actually, so you always had, you know, the law, going back to law school, kind of in your back pocket. Did you keep that in your back pocket to, you know, pacify your parents? Or did you keep that in your back pocket for yourself? Because despite various confirmations along the way, did you, were you still unsure whether this was... the will of God, or the path that God has called you on?
I'd be lying if I said, oh, I always knew, trust and obey, for there's no other way. I'd be lying. It was the rock I had placed for myself.
Right.
I always felt like, okay, well, Lord, I don't actually know where this is going, but if it doesn't go where it needs to go, I think it was something like I knew I had 2 or 3 years where my legal degree was still valid to go back and do the solicitor training. So at that point, I was like, yeah, okay, it's fine. I'll, you know, it's going well, but if it doesn't, I'll just go back to law. I know that I've got this firm job that I can go and I'll just defer my law place for another year and then I can go back. So, you know... it also showed me that as much as God was revealing so many things to me, there was still that fear in me of fully releasing and being...
stepping out onto the waters.
Stepping out onto the waters. Exactly that. It was a real moment of the Lord beckoning me come and me taking the steps and going, oh, yeah, look, I'm walking on water until the seas became choppy. And then me going, Lord, rescue me quickly. Put me back into the legal boat. It was for both. Yeah. I was enjoying it, but I still was like, is this actually where I'm supposed to be?
So you still had doubts yourself, even as things were working out really positively, like with the agent, with nabbing a job before you'd even completed, even though all the signs were there and positive, you were still not 100% sure. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say. And I think it's also because, you know, like using the analogy of the walking on the water, it was, you're in a space sometimes where God is showing you, come and do this. Look, this is what's going on. And then all around you, I remember other people in my drama school who I believed had a lot more of like a qualification to do this than me, weren't getting jobs, weren't getting agents. I remember doing the job, and even when I was at the National, there were people who were like, you know, it's been 3 years since I worked. I'm so grateful that I got this job. And the fear begins to set in of going, hang on, well, what happens if after this job, I don't get another job? There are people here who actually are incredible and they haven't worked for 3 years. And people are saying to me they're working temp jobs. They have to, you know, one person was like, I work in a gym. Another person's like, when I'm not working, I work in like a coffee shop. So I was going, is this the job I'm actually considering doing?
Yeah.
Where I have a whole law degree. I could be earning, you know, really good money, doing a solid career.
And not have all this uncertainty.
Exactly. Or I'm going to step into this area of work, which is so uncertain, and I don't know what I'm doing. So it was constantly, like I said, when the seas changed, when your focus isn't on, you know, maybe all the signs and wonders of God, but someone drops a thing, then the fear comes in and you start going to yourself, okay, this is maybe not a long-term career choice. And yeah, I would be lying if I'd said that throughout my career, I haven't still had those moments of fear.
Sure. Okay. So, Nana, tell us and, you know, tell, you know, anyone that's hearing this conversation, which is, okay, in an industry that's so uncertain, we've just come off, you know, COVID a few years back and the industry completely shutting down. How do you hold on to your faith and how do you remain hopeful and trust God in an industry, in a sector such as this?
You know, because of the fact that when you go into auditions, like I've said, for every job I get, I've maybe done about 50 auditions.
Wow.
50 different auditions, 50 different levels of rejection. I will sometimes have an audition once, twice a week and hear nothing. And for months and months and months, there is nothing. And then out of the blue, something that I didn't think, you know, at the point where I've become like, well, that's it, I'm never going to work again, a job just turns up and I'm going, huh? And every job that I have got, there is like a miracle story to it, to points where it will be something like I'd met the writer at a party at an event I shouldn't have been at, or I go somewhere and I get talking to somebody who later on calls me and says, actually, the person you were talking to was a producer of this thing and they want you to come and do it.
Okay.
It's like at every single point, God places me in certain areas. And it's got to a point now where I have to just fully trust because I don't have any other option. And now Laura's gone and I have no plan B. So God is my plan A.
Yeah.
And I've got to a point of being quite, I'll say, sassy with God, where I'm like, Lord, I was doing law. I had a really set career path where right now I would have, you know, I'd be probably be on a six-figure salary like some of my friends, able to book holidays and live my life. I did this because I genuinely believe this is where the Spirit was guiding me to. And if this is where you've taken me, we're going to have to beat Elijah in this. And if you have to feed, send the birds to come and feed me.
Feed me.
That's what is, yeah. Pardon?
Feed me.
Feed me. I got to, do you know what I mean? And yeah. So what I will say is, there is going to be some times in life where we have to get to the point of relinquishing our own control as people and saying, God, it's like there's this woman who does these prayers, Cindy Trim, and Beulah, you actually introduced me to her.
Yeah.
She has this Cindy whole prayer Trim, thing. Yeah. And there's one thing that she prays. She said, if God doesn't intervene, there will be no intervention. And that has been something I've really stood on. I'm like, Lord, if you do not intervene in this, there cannot be an intervention because I do not have any other options. There are no plan Bs here. And at every single point, when I'm just, I stop and allow the Spirit to guide me, doors begin to open, even to the thing of you talk about COVID and things went really, really quiet. And I kind of had this moment of, Lord, I don't know what I'm going to do because there's no jobs out there. And everything is gone. And it was the year after COVID when every year I, you know, I pray for God to give me my word for the year, of the word that I need to stand on. And he gave me Jeremiah, I think Jeremiah 29. And it was talking about when the Israelites were carried into Babylon.
Yeah.
And it says that, you know, I don't want you just to survive whilst you're here. I want you to thrive.
Yeah.
I need you to know that you're going to be in this place, build homes,
yeah,
plant vineyards, have children, get married, thrive in this setting. And it was like, what you're not going to do, this isn't where I want you to end up, Nana, but in this setting, I need you to thrive and survive. And at that point, I started temping at a school. Mm-hmm. And I realized that even in these moments where the world that I was meant to be in, acting world, wasn't doing what it needed for me, I didn't just survive, I thrived in a place that I wasn't meant to be in. And then it was like, just as the school year was coming to an end, I got a big television job and was able to go back to the job that I'd loved.
Yeah.
And I realized as well that there were some moments where God was like, I need you to also do something else. Like I said, I don't know why or how God does what he does, but some of the kids with the most challenging issues in the school seem to take a liking to me and seem to actually listen to what I was trying to say to them. And the response when I was finally leaving was, I have videos of my last day. Students were coming in with gifts, flowers. They'd drawn me pictures, cards. Again, I just went back to the word that God had given me in Jeremiah, which was to thrive.
You've been obedient in that.
Exactly.
Yeah, even because if it wasn't your preferred season.
Honestly, Beulah, and that was it. In my mind, I was like, there are some times in life where you are not where you're supposed to be, and you have a choice. You can either sit there lamenting and saying, Lord, why? It's not fair.
Mm.
Or go, okay, Lord, I'm going to be obedient. It may not be where I feel you've led me, but in fact, there is a reason why I've taken this stopgap. Why have you let me stop? It's not easy, don't get me wrong. And there's still been some evenings where I'm here, like I said, wrestling with God. He and I are having some sassy conversations where I'm like, Lord, this is audition, you know, 42 and still no job. Just leaving it there with you, just so you understand. Bank account's looking low. What are we going to do here? You know? And okay. I think I'm at a stage now where we can laugh about it together.
So Nana, what would you say now to your younger self, either before you embarked on that law degree or before you filled in that application to go to drama school or at any point along this journey? What would you say to your younger self?
I think I would say to my younger self, Nana, you are a good person and you are multifaceted in your talents. You know, Nana, you are a beautiful woman, and don't let anything around you try and sort of diminish the beauty that you have physically and emotionally and mentally. Because I think growing up, there was so much sort of feeling very inadequate and feeling like, oh, I don't know where I fit into certain things and certain places and things. And yeah, I think I would boost myself up, first of all, and go, girl, you are lovely.
Yeah.
But I know that my younger self probably wouldn't have heard my older self. My younger self would have been like, what do you know? there would be that. I would also say to my younger self that everything is working out for your good.
Mm.
You have to believe that. You can't see what the twists and the turns are, but everything is actually working out for your good. It will be okay. I know sometimes you're not 100% certain about what you're doing. You don't know if you're going right or left or what it is the outcome is going to be, but your steps have been ordered. It's going to be okay. I think there was just that need for me to be reassured on the one hand, but then I'm going to flip it completely and say, I might also not say anything to my younger self, because I think, again, like I said, because I think I said earlier, if I had known what was to come, would I have come into this industry, one? Or would I have worked as hard as I did in certain other areas? Would I have been more lax because I would have gone, oh, well, I know I'm going to get this specific job. So I'm going to chill. I'm not really going to stress about those auditions because I know that's the one I'm meant to get. I'll put all my effort into that job. You know?
Sure, you wouldn't have wanted to have tampered in any way.
Yeah, it's a weird butterfly effect. So I think, you know, on the one hand, I would have loved to say to myself, it's going to be okay. And, you know, just hold on to yourself and love yourself a bit more and be more, afford yourself a bit more grace in being hard on yourself in so many aspects of your life. Like, you know, why am I not getting amazing grades in this? Or why did that not happen? And is that because I needed that to happen for this to happen? Now I can look back and see the things that didn't go in my favor actually were meant to happen so that another decision would be made. So I just know that so many things, good and bad, were orchestrated for me to be where I am today and be the person that I am right now. So I'm torn. On the one hand, I would love to sort of give my old self reassurance, but then on the other hand, I almost feel like good and bad.
Yeah. Just leave it. Don't say anything.
I wouldn't say anything, because actually everything that has happened to me in my life and all the stuff that I've been through and the job that I've done and the career that I've had, it needed to be this way for me to get to where I am right now. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you did explain so beautifully, I guess, the story of how you ended up in performing arts, essentially. And it was quite clear, I guess, from the discussion and the story that you relayed, that God really did set everything in stone for you. Like, he really did, you know, just make things come to fruition. So it was quite clear that his hand was upon it. But I guess my question is, have you ever had other seasons? Like, you have talked about, I guess, COVID, and then you had gone into teaching when it was completely different to what I guess you had really felt was your calling. Have you ever had other seasons, or even this season in particular, when you just felt unclear about God's will in that moment? Like, even though you were being used by God, for example, in the school, was there any doubt about God's will for what was next in your career? And if so, how did you handle that?
Yes, to be fair, there has been. The teaching was one of the big things, because I was there for, 8-9 months, and they offered me a full-time job. Yeah. And so at the time,
as a full-time teacher now?
To stay on. So I had, after 6-7 months of being there, the headmistress called me in for a meeting, and I was like, oh, okay. And it was her and one of the other heads of department, and they'd effectively just said, look, we think you have a natural talent for teaching English. The kids love you, and you're actually really good. And they'd sit in on some of my lessons just to make sure I wasn't, you know, just doing random stuff. And they said to me, we'd love to offer you a full-time position and to pay for you to go and do your teacher training. I said, wow. So they effectively said, look, we're going to pay for you to have teacher training, so you have an actual teacher qualification. And whilst you're teaching, we'll pay you to keep teaching at the school. And at that time, like I said, I'd been auditioning and not getting anything. So again, I had another moment of saying, okay, Lord, I know the word that I stood on, which is to thrive in this season. Is it that you want me to thrive and actually gain a teacher qualification? Is this a stopgap? Or is this now that you're saying to me, in fact, Nana, the acting has come to an end. This is another aspect of something that you need to do. At the time, now again, my marriage had broken down. So I was divorced and I'm now a single parent. So I had again been praying at the time of like, Lord, I'm a single parent. It's just me, myself and I now with my kids. I need something that's going to give me a solid income to be able to, you know,
provide and be stable.
And one thing the teaching did was, obviously, when my kids were on holiday, I was on holiday.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, I'd finish when they would finish. So it worked really well for me as a mother. Whereas acting can be quite sporadic and you're here, there, everywhere. So
yeah, if you've got evening shows or you're traveling for work, and
it makes it quite difficult with the childcare. And so I was like, is this God's way of showing me that now is the time for me to become a teacher and focus on this aspect of things? And I remember having conversations. I think I spoke to you, Beulah. I spoke to my parents. I had other actor friends. And I had a lot of different voices of people saying, maybe this is God's, you know, will for you. Maybe teaching is now the new thing for you. Look at how this door has opened, where you're going to have a job and the training all paid for. How is this not God? So I went into a place of, I think I fasted and I said, Lord, I'm at a crossroads here. And I don't know what your will is in this moment. I've been standing on this word of to thrive and survive while I'm in a place where I don't feel like I'm supposed to be. But how long am I going to be in this wilderness for? If I'm going to be in this wilderness for a couple of years, is it worthwhile me taking these people up on their offer and at least getting a teacher training qualification? or should I say no? And I felt just like God speaking to me and saying, this is your choice, Nana. And I was like, what? And it was this thing of like, you've prayed to me for stability. You prayed to me that you wanted something that would give you the ability to be with your kids and do all this stuff. I've given you what you've asked for. This will give you the thing that you've prayed for. But the choice is yours. You can either go with this, or you can trust in the journey that I'd always been placing for you. And that is the message that I got. And it was almost like God saying to me, pick. What do you want? Do you want the dream? Do you want the passion? Do you want the thing that we've continued on? Or you can stop. And you will have a really nice, secure situation here. Or you can continue with me. But you can't have both.
So either one are answered prayers, right, Nana?
Yes, exactly that. Yeah. Either one was an answered prayer. And this is also when I actually realised that I think so many times as Christians, we think, oh, there's only one way. There is only one way. You have to do this or else. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I think it's in this season that I feel like God has really shown me that there are multiple ways to the thing. And sometimes you can pray for something so hard and God's like, okay, here, have that. Is it actually what you want? Do you want what it is that you want, or do you want my will for you? But you can't have both, you know? You have to sometimes get to a point of trusting that, Lord, I want your will to be done in my life. And that takes a certain level of relinquishing what you want.
Yeah.
And getting to the point where you're like, Lord, let what I want and your will be aligned. And if you can get to that point, I think you're in a space of just beauty and wonder. Because I think as humans, some of the times the things that we want, we know what we want to be comfortable. But when you're traveling with God, it's not this smooth sailing. It's that jagged edge, that road that you're like, Lord, I don't know. I really like this really clear path that looks like it's got butterflies and daisies. I don't really want to go down that hilly terrain because I don't know what's down there. And God's like, have a choice.
Yeah.
And you know, and I knew in my heart that if I had taken the full-time teaching job, I would always feel like, Nana, you didn't trust. You know, yeah, you'd have the teaching job, but you would always be sitting and thinking, what else was there that God wanted to do? So I went in to see the head. So they gave me 2 weeks to think about it. And I was like, oh, Lord. And I prayed and I prayed. And, you know, I had one side with some of my family going, Nana, this is, you know, it could be God. This is, you know, you asked for stability. You've been offered stability. And then there was the other side where it was like, yeah, but Nana, this isn't where your dream was. And again, like I said, the whole story of Joseph kept coming back to me of, you can stay in this place and you'd be really, you know, you'd be at peace. But is this the dream and the vision that God showed you very early on?
Yeah.
You have to make a decision.
I remember us having that conversation, Nana, and I just remember us very much, after I think it was breakfast, wasn't it? I think we'd had breakfast together, and then just be like, well, no, God said to thrive where you're at, but not to stay where you're at, because the latter part of that promise in Jeremiah is that he would bring you back.
That part.
You know, that's the second part of that word, right? Yeah. So there is that word, which is, okay, there is a season where we might find ourselves in places and spaces that, well, how did we get here? Not quite where I want to be or what I want to be doing, but we're there and we're going to, you know, dig deep and we're going to be fruitful and we're going to allow our lives to be used by God. But the second part of it is that he would bring you back after a certain period of time. And so, you know, for us, well, I don't know, when we spoke, it was very clear to me that acting was your promised land.
It was my promised land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say there was anyone in particular that really inspired you in this journey? Like, who would you say was your biggest inspiration or champion?
I kid you not, Beulah Sander, if she knows what she did for me in that moment, I think, because I remember I'd just call her and I'd go, I'm so confused, I don't know what to do. And, you know, we've been friends since, what, we were 16. And it was just moments of, you know, she'd been there during my marriage breakup and she'd seen sort of the situation and the struggles that I'd been through. And, you know, even when finding housing, Beulah was the one who helped me to secure the house that I live in now. And it was, I was just in the wilderness. I was thinking, Lord, I don't know what to do. And what I will say is one thing I love about this walk with God is you're never alone.
Yeah.
And he always sends for you guides and people. And it's also knowing that you have to surround yourself with people who are also in tune with the will of God. People who will intercede on your behalf.
Yeah.
People who you know are also, it's not anything to do with like, oh, well, I think she should do this. People who actually go to God and say, God, what kind of advice, what do I say to this other person? And that's who you need to surround yourself with. And I think it's really important that in life, God will show you the people who are the advocates for you. And when you find those people and you go to them and you tell them what's going on, it's almost like God, if God can't get through to you, he's going to find other people to come and talk to you.
Yeah.
You know.
If he has to use a donkey, he uses a donkey, right?
Listen, if he has to use a donkey, like Balak, listen, the donkey will start talking. Also, randomly on the side, my kids...
Yeah.
They would say stuff to me like, Mom, you like school, don't you? They're like, yeah, but what about acting? I thought that's what you really wanted to do. Don't you want to be an actor, Mummy? And so it will sometimes be out of the mouth of babes.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
You know, it will be out of the mouth of babes. And even to the random side, my ex-husband, who, again, God will use even those around you who you wouldn't want to listen to. You know, I remember having a conversation with him and him going, oh, okay, so how's the teaching going? And me going, yeah, you know, they're offering a full-time job. And he was like, that's great. But he goes, is that what you actually want to do? He said, for as long as I've known you, acting has been the thing you've wanted to do. And, you know, as much as I wanted to sort of go, I can do other things, you know, I knew that was pride from my part. And again, it's almost like going, God can even send, like Beulah said, the donkeys to come and talk to you.
Yeah.
And really challenge you into going, what is it that you want? What's important to you?
I have a question then, because obviously I've had a great privilege to be a witness over a number of years of all that God is doing, has done, the highs and the lows. There's been many surprises along the way, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but what's one way or one, you know, notable moment in your life where God has surprised you in how his will is working out in your life?
When my marriage ended and I felt like that I was just in pieces.
Yeah.
Because I never thought that a divorce was part of God's will for my life, ever. And I remember being in a place of, God, what now? Because, you know, and the other thing I will say is my ex has a normal job. So when I was acting for many, many years, having my children and things, I had the buffer of my ex-husband's solid job.
Sure. Yeah, that's security.
The security.
Yeah.
So it's easy to trust in God when you feel as though he's also given you somebody who is going to pay the mortgage, who, if all else fails, you're okay. So I trusted in God and I had the faith and the belief of work. But, and this is me being really, truly honest, there was never a fear there because I always knew I had this person in my life who had the normal income and solid footing.
That so you could never, lean on.
I could be, lean on.
Yeah.
So I never, ever had a thing of like, oh God, There was never those mad prayers in the nighttime, you know. And I was with my ex for what, 17 years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so for 17 years, as much as I had to go, Father God, I need a job, Lord Jesus, step in for this acting role, I didn't ever get to that point of those real deep prayers, those moments of on the ground shaking, of like, you know, like I said, Cinder Trim, God, if you don't intervene, there is no intervention.
Yeah.
Until I got divorced. That's when things shifted for me. Because at that point, I was like, oh, God, this is what it means to be absolutely, totally dependent on God. And when your life is shifted, that is when God lets you really see that there had only been one person at the helm of every single aspect of things in my life. And it hadn't been my ex-husband. It had been God. And now I can sit back and go, all things work together for my good.
Yeah.
Even this thing that I never would have wanted to happen. Because what it did was it showed me that I was also had my foot, one foot in Christ, one foot in my, what the things surrounding me that I thought I had. And when the thing I thought I'd had was taken, I was falling. And God caught me. And it let me really have a different relationship with Christ. And so at every single turn now, when it was just me and God, God had to become my husband.
Yeah.
God had to become my other firm footing and foundation.
Become your agent.
He became everything.
It has to be everything, yeah.
Oh, that was amazing. Honestly, it was so good chatting through your entire journey. It's been so inspiring for me personally. Just to hear your journey and just to hear how God has really been in the detail of everything and just affirming his will in different ways, even in seasons of uncertainty and everything. So honestly, thank you so much for just sharing your journey with us, being transparent and just, you know, coming in for a chat and just being real about what the journey has been like, and how we can really just stand firm in our faith and trust in God through it all. So thanks so much. Thank you.
That was so good.
Yeah. So I hope everyone listening as well has really enjoyed the conversation and has been encouraged. And let's just keep, you know, tuning in and just working out God together in our everyday lives. Thanks, guys.
Amen to that.